Yeah, so Nick and I were the comic duo that conducted the literature review, although you might have felt joyous about it at the start, perhaps halfway through less so, and you'll see why. So our process was that we first decided on topics to be included in the SDI testing guidelines, and we came up with this list, which is largely a list that was also reviewed in the previous iteration of the guidelines. Then for each topic, we conducted a search of the literature, the published literature, spanning from May 2013 to November 2018. And that date range was chosen because April 2013 was the end date of the previous guideline review. So we thought, rather than revisiting what has already been reviewed in the previous stigma guideline, we'll just continue on from the last one. Based on this review, we selected relevant papers based on some eligibility criteria, which are these. So we looked at prevalence of STIs in men who have sex with men in Australia. We also looked at prevalence of STIs in trans and gender diverse people internationally. We were keen to include trans and gender diverse people in these guidelines, which is an expansion from the previous guidelines. And the reason we chose an international criterion for this group is that, as I'm sure you're all aware, unfortunately, there still isn't enough data on the STI prevalence amongst trans and gender diverse people. Then we looked at the effect of PrEP on STI prevalence and incidence, again, internationally, because this data set's not very big. We looked at the effect of, one of the selection criteria was the effect of STIs on HIV incidence. And then we looked at the effect of screening programs on STI incidence and prevalence. So that's what those are the criteria we used to select papers. Then all the papers that were selected, we reviewed manually and summarized manually. And then we sent summaries to the review panel, consisting of Professor David Templeton, Associate Professor Chris Bourne, Dr. Rick Varma, and Dr. Phil Reed. And these were the members of the previous guideline panel. So again, for continuity, we thought it'd be nice to include them. And then after we received feedback from the review panel, we incorporated this feedback in our final recommendations to Stigma. Then we wrote a new guideline, and that was it. Then we sent it to Stigma, obviously, who subsequently reviewed it for approval and feedback. So now I'm going to run through each of the topics, so bear with me. It's going to be a bit of a steam train presentation. So for HIV, these are search terms that we used in Medline and PubMed. This yielded over 2,000 references, of which 1,300 was screened and 60 papers were selected and manually reviewed. Of these, 35 papers were relevant to the guideline, and these 35 papers were included in the guidelines. From this review, we found that we could make an argument that more frequent screening than annually could be, has an important role in public health. Screening for HIV is an important point of entry for PrEP. Screening for HIV potentially, or frequent screening for HIV potentially reduces the undiagnosed fraction of people living with HIV. It may result in early diagnosis, early access to treatment, and early viral suppression. And it is a crucial, frequent screening for HIV is a crucial part of Australia's ending HIV strategies. We also found in our literature review that there was an increasingly large list of subpopulations that are now recognised as being at risk of HIV or at being at high risk of HIV. So these are people who have a history of STIs, people who may be born in certain countries, and in Australia, obviously, currently this is highlighted as young MSM born overseas. People who are recent arrivals in Australia, again, the usual sexual history components, so a larger number of partners, group sex, less condoms, attendance at sex on premises venues. Now also people who are Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander, people who are eligible for PrEP, people who use substances, people who engage in chemsex, people who inject drugs. So as a result of that, we thought it's getting quite unwieldy to have all these subpopulations. So we've simplified the guideline and said everyone should just be screened every 3 months, unless you're at particularly low risk of HIV. Now, we can have arguments about what that means, but perhaps someone in a mutually monogamous relationship may decide to be screened less frequently, but certainly everyone else should be recommended to screen 3 monthly. So that's a change from the previous guideline. Then we looked at syphilis. Here, again, the search terms. This yielded 313 published papers, which were screened according to eligibility criteria, and then of those, 50 papers were deemed relevant to the guideline and were included, and these were all manually reviewed. The evidence around syphilis, and sorry, this is perhaps lacking in detail, but it's just because of the large number of papers that are included in these recommendations that this is really just broad brushstroke overview, and I should say that we're currently in the process of writing a companion paper that describes all this evidence in great detail. That paper is currently 80 pages. So we're getting there. So the evidence showed that syphilis prevalence is high and continues to increase. We also found evidence that mathematical modelling supports frequent syphilis screening and that this may reduce syphilis transmission. We found that evidence that among men of sex with men who are not on PrEP, syphilis and HIV are often diagnosed simultaneously, and hence syphilis has been found to be a strong predictor of subsequent HIV seroconversion. And several strategies that have been shown in the published literature to improve syphilis screening uptake include opt-out testing for syphilis during routine HIV care and the use of SMS reminders for people to come back for frequent screening. So in terms of the recommendations from this evidence, we've changed again that men of sex with men should be screened quarterly or every 3 months rather than annually as a default option, except if they're at very low risk. What we haven't changed is that men of sex with men who are living with HIV should be encouraged to have opt-out testing for syphilis during their routine monitoring. But in addition to that, given that routine monitoring frequencies are now becoming less frequent, so some people are being seen every 6 months or even once a year for their HIV monitoring, that people who are having less frequent monitoring should have interval testing in between their HIV monitoring visits. So if you're coming in to your HIV provider once every 6 months for your monitoring, then in between it would be recommended that you come in just for a syphilis test. That's syphilis. So gonorrhea, these are the search terms. This yielded over 500 records that were reviewed according to eligibility criteria, and of these, 61 papers fitted the eligibility criteria and were included in the guideline. This showed that, again, men who have sex with men are at high and ongoingly increasingly at risk of gonorrhea, particularly at the oropharynx and rectum. Keep in mind this is asymptomatic men who have sex with men, as these are screening guidelines. So obviously asymptomatic urethral gonorrhea is not that common. And it showed that a large proportion of anorectal gonorrhea cases would be missed if we didn't test for gonorrhea in men who said that they didn't have anal sex. So I thought that makes sense. So even men who don't have anal sex should have anorectal swabs for gonorrhea. As a result of this evidence, we again recommended that all men who have sex with men should have quarterly gonorrhea testing. I'm sorry if I sound like a broken record. And that all men who have sex with men should have 3-site testing, as in urine, throat, and anorectal testing, regardless of their sexual practices. That takes us to chlamydia, and here are the search terms. So this yielded over 600 papers, of which 437 were screened, as in they were read manually, and of these, 50 were deemed eligible for inclusion according to the criteria. And of these, 26 papers contained evidence that was relevant to the guidelines. Again, high prevalence of chlamydia amongst asymptomatic men of sex with men, including at the pharynx. Again, this identified subpopulations at higher risk, so people with higher number of sexual partners, people with previous STIs, people who are HIV positive, Aboriginal, Torres Strait Islander, men of sex with men, people known to be contacts, people on PrEP. people who are eligible in PrEP but are not yet taking PrEP. So again, this, repeating myself, but we recommended that asymptomatic men of sex with men should be screened quarterly unless they were at particularly low risk for chlamydia, that is. So hepatitis C. I haven't put the search terms up there, but they reflect the ones that we use in the other topics. So this yielded over 700 references, of which 470 were screened, and 57 were eligible according to the criteria. And then of those papers, 23 contained evidence that was relevant to the guidelines. The evidence showed that there is some evidence for screening asymptomatic HIV-positive men of sex with men regardless of other risk factors. So injecting drug use is not necessarily an exclusive risk factor. And this was based on numerous prevalence studies and systematic reviews. It showed that the risk factors identified for Hep C infection varied and they overlap, and they include being diagnosed with syphilis, having HIV, using non-injecting drugs, so that, you know, can mean chemsex as well, using injecting drugs, particular sexual behaviours such as using anal toys or being fisted. There was a lack of evidence or a lack of convincing evidence for individual benefit of Hep C testing in men of sex with men who are on PrEP, so HIV negative men of sex with men, if they had no other Hep C risk factors. However, there's a theoretical public health benefit for screening HIV-negative men who have sex with men who are on PrEP, as that could be argued that this could protect their HIV-positive sexual partners against Hep C infection during sex. And we also noted that, obviously, the Hep C screening was included in the national PrEP guidelines, and we felt it didn't make sense to have two guidelines in Australia that contradict each other. So a recommendation to the stigma panel was that we should align the Hep C recommendations in the stigma guidelines with the Hep C recommendations in the PrEP guidelines, and hence recommend annual screening for men who have sex with men on PrEP. So at the start of starting PrEP and then ongoingly annually. And obviously we've retained the recommendation that men who have sex with men who are living with HIV have annual Hep C testing as well. So hepatitis A and B, these are fortunately much briefer. So hepatitis A, again, similar search terms, but this yielded 31 records and we included 12, and basically there was no evidence to change the existing guideline recommendations about Hep A. Similarly for hepatitis B. So again, for both Hep A and B, the recommendation is to check serology prior to vaccination. We looked at, I know some clinicians were worried that we might change the mycoplasma genitalium recommendation, but you may be relieved that we have not changed this. So there was a relative paucity of data around mycoplasma. We haven't changed the guidelines, so testing for mycoplasma in asymptomatic men who have sex with men is still not recommended. And similarly for human papillomavirus, we do not recommend testing for HPV, although we did note that there is an argument for having an annual digital rectal exam, as in finger up the bum, for older HIV-positive men who have sex with men in order to try to detect anal cancer at an earlier stage. So we have included that in the stigma guidelines. Obviously, you know, we had some sort of consideration around, you know, is anal cancer, can it be conceptualized as a sexually transmitted infection, but we felt it was reasonable to include it in the STI guidelines. Then for LGV or lymphogranuloma venereum, there's no evidence to support routine testing of for LGV amongst asymptomatic men of sex with men, as in testing over and above testing for chlamydia. We have not changed the herpes simplex virus recommendation. It's still not in this edition of the guidelines. And also we do not recommend testing for trichomonas. So I thought it was more pages. 48 pages was the completed literature review.
Half the length of the PrEP
guideline, thank you, which will eventually be 2 pages. And almost 300 references, and we're currently editing this. Now, the reason I said 70, because in my editing, I've actually blown it out to 70 pages now. currently being edited for publication, which we hope will happen soon so that it can be used as a reference point. So thank you.